This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Welcome to the Thursday, May 28th, 2020 edition of the Noon Business Hour. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart, filling in for Cisco Cotto today. The Noon Business Hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. New York City is reporting the lowest daily positive testing rate since the coronavirus pandemic began. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, there's a whole lot of economic data out today, and joining us to break it down is Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute based in St. Louis. Paul, welcome back to the program. Let's start off with the applications for first-time unemployment benefits. It's safe to say we have definitely bent the curve when it comes to layoffs, but 2.1 million people filing for unemployment benefits for the first time, that is still an eye-popping number.
You're absolutely right. It's still an incredibly large number, and we tend to lose track of how bad it is because it's actually down from the 6+ million number that we had in March for the first week of the lockdown. But that has gotten better, and as the reporter acknowledged, what we're seeing now is some people are starting to go back to work. That's why these continuing claims, people who are continuing to collect unemployment, not just the first timers, the continuing claims are going down. That's a good sign, but you still have massive numbers. 40 million people lost their jobs in the last 2 months. And they're not all getting them back right away. It's going to take some time.
And also on the it's going to take some time standpoint for researchers and analysts, how long will it take to really get a sense of what sectors were impacted by the layoffs and how many were related to the pandemic directly versus the pandemic probably accelerating some companies' layoff plans?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's easy to pinpoint the sectors that that got hit first and hardest. Those would be travel, tourism, leisure, airlines, any restaurants, anybody relating to or anyone working in an organization or an industry where you have a lot of people congregating. All of that was off limits, so those places all went away, and a lot of them won't be coming back. After that, then you have the related trades. So, you know, the carpenter that can't get in to fix the restaurants, that can't get in to fix the hotels. They're going to be adversely affected. And there's a lot of falling dominoes across this economy that indicate construction and other industries that are going to be suffering for a time before we start to see some recovery.
GDP shrank 5% in the first quarter. That number expected to be even lower in the second quarter. With a lot of companies suspending their guidance because of the unprecedented nature of the COVID-19 economic fallout, does the second quarter GDP number simply become a trivia question?
It does. The markets have long since moved on from that. They are expecting a big negative number in the second quarter, worse than the first quarter's 5% decline. That means profits will also have declined much more than what they showed in the first quarter. And the first quarter was the worst we've had since the fourth quarter of 2008. So this is already an unprecedented sort of a period. But the markets are looking ahead, and they're seeing the economy reopened. We're still not seeing a lot of people getting out yet. But as that happens, more people will go back to work, more people start spending, and then profits start to look better a year from now. And that's where we are, too. We think the stock market by the end of 2021 will be higher. That's why you're seeing buyers now.
Thanks for joining us today. Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's an encouraging report from New York City today. Let's get the latest on COVID-19 from Michelle Cortez, health reporter with Bloomberg News based in Minneapolis. Michelle, welcome back to the program. It looks like that positivity rate continues to fall through the single digits.
Exactly. That shows us that in New York City, they're testing more people that don't have the virus than they were in the past. That implies that the levels of the virus are perhaps declining. They want to keep that rate under 15%, and they were at 6% this past week.
And that also dovetails with Illinois' positivity rate reported yesterday, which was just shy of 7%. What is the takeaway from that? Does that mean the virus is starting to recede, or does that mean it's just simply a reflection of more people staying inside and altering their behavior?
Well, it's a reflection, actually, of how well we're understanding what's happening with the virus and how widely it's circulating. It shows that there are more people out there who are showing symptoms and they're being tested because they think they might be positive, and in fact, they aren't. So that's a reflection of the fact that the virus isn't as widespread. We are more aware of where it is, and that way we can track the patients and their close contacts better. Also, it shows that we are doing a good job staying inside and not passing along the virus to each other.
But people are starting to venture outside, and Las Vegas is considering reopening. Will people be gambling with their lives as well as their money when they return to casinos later this summer?
You know what, Rob, you're absolutely right. That's exactly the situation. But they're also gambling with their economies, right? Both of these places, New York and Las Vegas, have this conundrum where their entire economies rely on tourism and people coming in. And that's exactly the same problem that they have with getting their population, their citizenry sick. So it's this balance of what do you do? But yes, exactly. In Las Vegas, they are opening up the casinos. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, says that's a dangerous move for them, and we're likely to start seeing increased rates of coronavirus spreading around. That's a gamble they're apparently willing to take, and as long as they don't overwhelm their hospitals, we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Michelle Cortez, health reporter, Bloomberg News, based in Minneapolis.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump is set to sign an executive order that makes it easier for social media companies to be held liable for the content posted on their platforms. To help us explain what happens next, we welcome in Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor of The Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome back to the program. This whole kerfuffle between President Trump and the platform that launched him to the White House stems from the fact that on Tuesday, the Twitter, for the first time, posted a fact-checking link under a tweet about voting by mail, and the president got very upset. This executive order, what would it take for it to have any legal weight whatsoever?
Probably a lot more legal precedent than exists. In other words, it's unlikely it's going to work. For people who are, you know, a lot of people who are listening to this kerfuffle, to use your word, which I think is right, they're trying to decide, hey, where does Twitter sit in this whole First Amendment challenge? In other words, really, the president and others are saying, hey, you know, you can't limit my free speech. I can say anything I want. It's the First Amendment. The challenge the sort of disconnect that some folks are unaware exists is that the First Amendment only limits government actors. In other words, federal, state, and local governments can't limit your speech. You can say whatever you want. There are limits. The Supreme Court said, for example, you can't shout fire in a crowded movie house. You can't use certain words on the radio. You can think them, but you can't say them. So there are some limits. But by and large, those limits are established by the government. And the limit on the government is the First Amendment. So Twitter is a private company. It's not a government entity. So the Twitter is allowed, as ostensibly as a publisher, to limit what's on its page. So that's the challenge.
And this also applies to Facebook and Snapchat, Instagram, other social media platforms that are finding themselves in the middle of the political speech debate. But it's safe to say that when Mark Zuckerberg developed Facebook 16 years ago, or helped develop Facebook 16 years ago, or when Jack Dorsey started Twitter 13 years ago, that neither of them anticipated seeing themselves as being a free speech guardian.
No, in fact, you put your finger on it. A moment ago, you said their platform. And that's exactly what Zuckerberg and Dorsey and everybody else who own and run these things say they are. They're a platform. They're literally just a place onto which you place ideas. That's all. Their only responsibility is to provide the platform. There are others who argue pretty, you know, pretty loudly that they're not platforms at all. That's silly. They're actually publishers. They take in money. They take in advertising. They decide what things go on their private, in their private space. Private, again, being a private company, publicly traded, but a private company. And a publisher has different responsibilities. In fact, different rights. The publisher is allowed. I wrote for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Fortune Magazine, Fast Company Magazine. I had editors. And the editors decided what went on that platform. They were publishers. They decided what went on their pages and what didn't. Jack Dorsey and Facebook are saying, hey, hands off. We're just a platform. And the others are arguing, no. You are a publisher. You get to decide. And by the way, the First Amendment does not apply to things said there because you're a private company and not a government entity. That's kind of what it comes down to.
Well, thank you for helping us sort this all out. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
This is Chicago's all-news station. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM and WBBMNewsRadio.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart, sitting in for Cisco Cotto, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump comments on the latest COVID death total. The state of Illinois reaches a grim pandemic milestone. In Technology Thursday, the coronavirus may be diverting attention from the rise of robots in retail, and Chicago restaurants look ahead to the next phase of the city's gradual reopening. WBBM Business, the Dow is up 162 points, the NASDAQ is up 106, and the S&P 500 up 31. AccuWeather says mostly cloudy, warm and humid today with a couple of showers and thunderstorms into the early evening, a high today of 80. Right now we have 72 degrees in Chicago at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, President Trump is noting the 100,000th death from COVID-19.
The president's first public statement on the grim milestone came in a tweet. Mr. Trump says he extends his heartfelt sympathy and love to the families and friends of those who've died. Since the beginning of the outbreak, the president has offered his own estimates of the total number of dead, estimates that have been surpassed by the lethality of the virus and its continued spread. But he's also insisted the toll would have been far worse, in the millions, he's claimed, had he not enacted limited travel bans. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
Governor Pritzker has announced the latest deaths from coronavirus in Illinois.
We have lost another 160 Illinoisans in the battle against COVID-19, bringing our statewide total of lives lost to 5,083.
The total number of cases in Illinois has surpassed 114,000. The governor says the state remains on track to move into phase three of his Restore Illinois plan tomorrow. If you're among the many now working from home, just ask your smart speaker to play WBBM News Radio. WBBM News Time, 12:32, the noon business hour presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Stocks are trading higher today. Let's discuss what's moving Wall Street with Chris Everett with Everett Wealth Solutions, based in Forest Park. Chris, welcome back to the program. The Dow, day four of its winning streak. How far down the road are investors looking as economies begin to reopen from coast to coast?
I don't think they're looking past their nose, to be quite frank. I don't think there's enough reason to go higher. There's just a lot of negative news still going on. I mean, you look at the positive. Let's start there. Yes, Dollar Tree popped up nicely today. And what's so crazy to me is Dollar Tree pops up, but Dollar General goes down. And yet Dollar General has better earnings, has a dividend. Now, it's twice as expensive. That could be why. The other reason I think sometimes the market is so high, especially right now, I was looking at the divergence between what I want to call smart money and retail thinking money. And if you look, you can see that the retail investors have been just jumping in. And they've ridden up a nice, 36% run-up in the market, which is lovely. But do you know, since the end of February, the quote-unquote smart money has been exiting the door? So if they're worried, I'm going to be worried. Not only that, did you see how much Buffett sold recently? I mean, he sold off banks, energy, airline stocks, over billions of dollars. So that's kind of where my brain's at today. It's not in such a happy place. I'm thinking, if the market's going up, what a great time to trim some of your positions.
Now,
how bad for being negative?
Well, I was going to also ask you, too, I mean, just with so much fiscal stimulus being pushed out by Washington these days, are people trying to seek shelter in precious metals?
Oh, absolutely. We are definitely starting to add more and more metals. You know, now the summer's coming, and sometimes in the summer it gets a little bit soft, so beware of that. But definitely it's time. And I think across the board, not just gold, not just silver, but, you know, put a nice basket together. But I'd want to overweight gold. Good question.
As you look at, you know, you talk about how the smart money is getting out of the market, trying to seek shelter from what will definitely be a rocky year going forward. Is there anything, though, that investors are looking at or that you are looking at, what you're going to be watching as economies start to reopen, as Illinois starts to open restaurants, as Vegas opens the casinos, as people return to Disney World? What are some of the metrics that you're going to be keeping an eye on as you gauge, you know, volatility, you know, going forward?
Sure. I think that, great question. I love that the markets are trending higher, even though I don't believe they should be. I look at the vaccine information. I know that a lot of this happiness is based on all the stuff that's going on with the vaccine, but we don't have one yet. It could still be a year or two before we actually have one. And I think once that actually settles in, we're going to start seeing people pull back again. They're feeling happy because they get to go outside, some of us, right? But not everybody. And then what about the folks that aren't coming back to work because they're making more money on unemployment? So we've got that issue. I'm looking at the cost of business going forward. You have to put up shields and invest in more cleaning supplies. And maybe you have to pay people more to get them to come back to work. A lot of crazy stuff going on out there.
And then lastly, you talk about the exuberance over the possibility of a vaccine existing. And that's a question I always have. As an economist, are they a good epidemiologist or are they still a good economist?
You know, I'm not really sure. When it comes to medical people, they're just going to be really careful. When it comes to the economy, we're trying to not fight the Fed. You know, like, I'm not saying that the market's going to crumble tomorrow. I'm not saying that everything's going to go to hell in a handbasket immediately, but I think it eventually will. So, you know, you have to kind of step back and then go in your closet and pray almost and try to get a read on what's the best next forward movement.
So it's not going to go to hell in a handbasket, but maybe it'll be in a very slow car in the right lane with the blinker on.
Well, I think it will eventually get pretty ugly. I'm not saying tomorrow. I'm saying this is a great time to take advantage of pulling some of your winnings off the table.
All right, Chris Everett, thanks for joining us this afternoon, a financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions based in Forest Park. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, robots push humans from the retail space.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. The COVID crisis has retailers pivoting in many ways, including using robots in both warehouses and stores. And joining us with the latest is Stephen Keith Platt, director and research fellow at the Platt Retail Institute based in Hinsdale. Stephen, welcome back to the program. When we're talking about retail robots, what types of technologies will be applied in the retail space, and how will we see them, say, when we're at the grocery store or the mall?
Sure, Rob. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on. So there's about 8 different types of robots being deployed currently. They range from autonomous floor scrubbers to what we call shelf audit robots that scan for price consistency, misplaced items, out of stocks, et cetera. As well as in the back of the store, you're starting to see automation being deployed to fill online orders so that the retailer can automate that whole process rather than doing it manually. So COVID has really expedited the move toward a lot of grocers thinking about how to automate the process.
Now, how many human employees would these retail robots displace?
Well, Rob, we don't really like to think about it in those terms. We really like to think about it more in terms of optimization. I mean, scrubbing floors, rather, is not the greatest use of employee time. A whole host of other things that it then frees up labor to concentrate on more value-added activities.
And you did talk about how this is kind of forcing the application of technology or robots into the retail space. And that seems to jibe with the school of thought that the COVID-19 is really an acceleration event in many ways, and that about a decade's worth of economic change has been sandwiched into about 7 weeks of COVID-19 upheaval.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it really exposed a lot of, one, underinvestment historically, and two, weaknesses throughout the supply chain, and forcing people to reckon with that. And yeah, it's really leading to a lot of acceleration. And beyond robots, a lot of the AI activity that we do as well.
Now, what paint a positive portrait of the future of a retail space where there is a great deal of robotic technology and AI at work? How will that could that experience lead to a much better situation for both people who work in the retail space and people who just go to the store?
Yeah, I think so, Rob. So we've thought about what the grocery store of the future is going to look like. And today, for example, the average grocer is maybe 60,000 square feet, maybe 50 of that is dedicated to merchandise. In the future, it's going to be exactly the opposite. People that like to come in and pick their produce and their meats, they'll be able to do so. And their can of beans and their toilet paper and anything else will be picked for them automatically in the back. So it'll be a much quicker experience, more pleasant experience, totally automated in terms of the things people don't really want to deal with. And for that person that likes to pick out their apples, they'll be able to do it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Stephen Keith Platt, Director and Research Fellow at the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale and Adjunct Professor and Research Director at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern. Join us this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a local restaurant owner talks about the new reality for his industry.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Restaurants are doing what they can to survive the viral pandemic. We welcome in Frank Ruffalo, managing partner of Il Cucino in Chicago, just a hop, skip, and a jump from McCormick Place at 21st in Indiana. Frank, welcome to the program. Most restaurants in Illinois on Friday will begin to start offering outdoor service if they have the space to do so.
Yep.
Being in Chicago, you still have to wait a little while longer. The last time we heard, it was going to be sometime in early June. Are you getting any indications of an actual date yet?
You know, nothing as far as we know. We find out everything the same time the general public does, so we're just keeping our fingers crossed, watching the news, and doing the best preparations as we can.
And yet, it seems like you made a move last year to expand your outdoor dining space that now looks really forward-thinking.
Yeah, you know, we're happy we did that. We did a fully enclosable roof and wall system. So it's going to be a Four Seasons room. It's going to have heating, air conditioning, and everything. So we're kind of very excited to open that up, one, because we're excited just to see the new space, and two, with this new reality that's settling in, it's going to be the most usable space out of the entire restaurant.
As you get ready to offer outdoor, socially distant dining once again, now that we moved on past the March to May era, you know, how would you assess, you know, that period of time where you could only do takeout or delivery offerings? What lessons did you learn, and is there anything you would actually apply going forward?
A lot of the stuff we did is we started implementing online ordering. So we were eliminating the third-party services, so they weren't taking a percentage of that. And a lot of customers definitely used it. It was beneficial to us because we kind of got to get any of the little kinks out now before we ramp back up. I think that's going to be the wave of the future because with all of this going on, people have learned that, you know, Grubhub and Uber, they're not just charging a delivery fee to the customer, that the restaurant is actually paying a big fee on that. So stuff like that, we were doing contactless payment. We have the ability now, even when we do open up for customers to do contactless payment at the table where they don't have to sign a credit card sheet or anything like that. So a couple new innovations that are definitely going to be able to help us with this challenging time.
And then what about the takeout cocktail bill that Governor Pritzker signed not too long ago? Is that going to be a big boost to your business?
It's kind of up in the air still. We don't know how that's going to go. We're definitely going to go with it and offer it to the customers. But I think a lot of the part is people want to come out and have an experience, and they want to, you know, enjoy a cocktail with their friends and catch up. It's not always just about consuming alcohol, because obviously you can go to other places and get that. But, you know, we have a couple signature cocktails that we're going to work on formulating it correctly so we could sell that to carry out. We're going to continue it after this pandemic's over.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Frank Ruffalo, managing partner at Il Cullicino in Chicago, near the South Loop, 21st in Indiana. They do have a massive patio, so when the city of Chicago does allow restaurants to reopen as part of their reopening plan early next month, they'll be well-positioned to attract new business. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.